After planning to become a lawyer and never thinking about working in Hollywood, Kandel found her passion exactly where she least expected it. How she became a supervisor art director for lots of movies you probably watched already, and how honesty affects our first meeting and this episode, you can find out in episode 18 of the Walkie Talkie podcast. So, Walkie Talkie podcast is a recording episode 18, and I'm back in Vancouver with my guest today, which is Kandel. And I met Kandel in winter last year. And while we speak, we're sitting in Kandel's living room. So she's not really my guest. Again, I'm more a guest of you. I had this situation a couple of times ago with guests. I would like to tell, like, if you would like to tell how we met and where we met.
Well, we were going Northern Light chasing in the Yukon, wanting to stay within Canada because of the COVID. So we managed to find Southern Lakes Resort and meet you, Johan.
What happened when you went there and meet us there?
Well, it was pretty amazing when we landed and were waiting for our luggage. There were two fox out on the tarmac. So first wildlife sighting, not even having left the airport.
Yeah.
And then just how remote it was being driven like an hour and a half south to the resort. Just so wide open. And our driver was great because she's like, you make the mistake of forgetting something in Whitehorse because they live like half an hour from the resort and they made the mistake of having to go back to Whitehorse once for one thing they forgot on their list. Because when you're driving down, there's no corner stores.
Yeah, yeah.
Then she took us, we went to Carcross, like a nice little private tour, and then got to the resort and looked out at the expanse of this lake that was huge.
And it was, which time was it? Was end of December?
It was end of January.
End of January, all right.
Okay. January 27th to February 2nd.
Pretty dark?
It was dark for breakfast. That was pretty unusual, walking at like 9 a.m. in the dark to go and eat, and then the light coming through at 10:30 being bright. Yeah. But so dark and so bright with the stars at night.
So, because I ask that for a reason, because I always like to talk about encounters. So we both, like Dan, your partner, and I, like we encountered each other at this special place. What do you think about encounters in general? Like, is there, how do you go through life with encounters? Do you have everyday encounters or do you never thought about it?
Not everyday encounters, but enough that if there's connection, you know, just go with it, right?
When we went, or when you were in the resort, I was it the first conversation which we had about the Negroni?
Yeah.
That was it, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah. So thanks to you, now I'm knowing what a Negroni is.
That's why I stuck to gin and tonic.
Yeah, yeah. So you asked for a Negroni and I was working as a waiter and it was like,
what?
To be honest, I don't know what it is.
Yeah, that's okay.
Yeah.
Good to be honest.
Yeah. Yeah. And I can also be honest now because maybe you knew it, but I think you were the first guest who I did the snowmobile tour with alone because I never drove a snowmobile before. So I went to the Yukon and started learning it very quick. And they asked me if I can do tours with guests. And I was like, yeah, sure, I can do that. So I did it a couple of times with another guide and guest. So I think you guys were the first ones where I just did it by myself.
Whoa.
And did you notice
that?
To
tell
the
story. No.
No. Okay,
not at
that's,
all.
That's
no.
Perfect.
No.
Nice. Was it the first time for you to drive it or you did it before?
No, I did it before working on Cold Pursuit. But I drove it once, but I was usually the passenger. So I was a little more familiar with it because we did it daily.
Yeah.
So that was 5 years ago. So going back on it this time was like the first time.
That's that's a good point what you say because of it, you had to work with it because your job is very interesting for me. And I didn't notice what you're already doing until we met again in Vancouver because you invited me and my dad and my bonus mom And my dad was asking me, what are they doing? I was like, I don't know. I just became friends with them. They're nice. I don't know what they're doing. We didn't talk about it. And then we figured it out. And I was like, okay, that's a very interesting job. But I really never thought about much what is it about. So you're an art director?
Yeah, supervising art director.
For movies.
Correct.
Yeah. So what is it about? What is your job about? What are you doing?
Well, my job is kind of the second person in the art department to the production designer, who would be my boss. And whether that person's male or female, they're the one who deals with the director and set the overall creative look for the movie or the overall look of the movie. So that person is in charge of the design, and then I'm responsible for making sure that happens, talking to everybody within the art department, props, set deck, construction, paint, costumes sometimes, effects sometimes, and stunts. So really it's kind of more...
It's quite a lot.
It's a lot. It's a diplomatic job. I'm mostly talking. I may create like one graphic or one build, but usually it's more just talking and Microsoft like breakdowns and just making sure everybody knows what they're doing, when they're doing it.
Right. And are you working alone or are you working in a team?
It's a team. So the art department is a team.
Yeah.
So we go production designer, supervising art director. There might be one or two other art directors.
Yeah.
So one of those two other art directors, one might be responsible for locations. One might be responsible for builds.
Yeah.
Then there's assistant art directors, set designers, illustrators, graphic artists, art department coordinator, and art department assistants. So I'm kind of running all of those people.
Yeah.
And then first off, there'd be an illustrator that the designer and I would be talking to, and they would illustrate what the vision is.
Mm-hmm.
So that gets sold to the director, and then lots of times it has to be approved by the studio. So from that, then we would turn it over to a set designer, and they would draw it if it was something that needed to be built. And then talking with construction and doing the budget, making sure you stay on budget.
Yeah. So there's always a lot of people working for a movie.
Yeah.
But they're not always around and on every set, but you are.
Right.
You have to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I have to go out everywhere and just make sure, like, once the drawings go out, then I would go to the construction shop and just see if they had any questions, how it was going, making sure they were following what the drawings were.
Yeah.
And then with the painters, they come in after and then paint the set. Like, it might be like a pristine office, or it might be like a rundown house where you need different paint effects.
Mm.
So the painters would do up samples, and then I would get them to my boss, and he or she would pick, yep, that's what I want it to be. So then from this sample, then the painters take it and finish the set. Then set deck would come in, and that's another big team. Like, construction's big. They're all big depending on the size of the show, the schedule of the show. So then set deck comes in, and they were responsible for any of the furnishings, any lighting, any pictures, carpets, and then props kind of last. They're anything an actor holds.
So when this all is said, they can start recording.
Yeah.
And then you can relax a bit? No, you just hope that everything works.
No, then you have to, because of the schedule, you're doing going from one thing to the next, to the next, to the next. So you're making sure. And then especially like if there's big stunts involved, you got to make sure, like on Prey, we built a bunch of trees that were metal armatures built by special effects.
Yeah.
And then stunts would practice to make sure it met their needs and was safe. And
Before we go a bit more detail in which kind of movies you did, because you did big Hollywood movies, which you are a part of, how did you become an art director? Was it always your dream to do that? Or like, what's your story about going in this direction?
Well, I have two degrees. I have a degree in criminology and political science from SFU.
Uh-huh.
So I wanted to be a lawyer and a judge.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. And then I worked in the law courts downtown, setting criminal jury and non-jury trials, but quickly realizing I didn't want to do that.
Yeah.
And I didn't, like, my boss would have retired in 15 years. And it's like, I can't see myself staying there.
How old were you this time?
I was like 27-ish.
Yeah.
But that's where I met my judge friends, because they were articling and lawyers at the time.
Yeah.
So stayed in contact with them. And then I didn't know what I wanted to do. I actually applied to be an air traffic controller. Mm-hmm. I made it to round two of the interviews and then didn't make it any further. And then I went to some fashion seminars downtown and I thought I wanted to become a fashion forecaster.
Oh, yeah.
So I went to school in LA, Fashion Institute of Design and Merchandising, for like a year and a half, and was one of the top students. So I was up for one of the awards, but of course it went to an American, which makes sense. But
yeah.
And I never thought about the movies being in the heart of Hollywood. So it was during, I was working under the table. Actually, I don't know, we should say this part, but my boss wouldn't legitimize the job.
Yeah.
Like I could stay on a work visa for a year, but it was in the height of the recession in 1991. So I came home. And my mom used to be the director at Place des Arts in Coquitlam, which is a local place of the arts, like for pottery, ballet, dancing, piano, where we actually went when we were kids. And I never thought of the arts as a career.
Yeah.
And she said, oh, you should talk to this guy. He designs sets for movies and for telethons and for fashion shows. So I talked to him and he's like, oh, have you ever thought about the movies? I'm like, no. So he told me about it. So that was in 1992, 93. I started pounding the pavement, didn't know anybody, and got my first job on a small Canadian movie called Whale Music.
Say it again?
Whale Music.
Whale Music, yeah.
Yeah, it was pretty good.
Yeah.
And then...
And how was your connection to movies at all? Like, did you like
movies? Oh, yeah, I love movies, but just never thought about working in the movies.
Okay.
And yeah, then once I started working, like that was in the fall of 93. And then in 94, at the beginning of the year, I just started working. And I was happy being an assistant art director. And just then kind of by fluke, art directing fell into my lap. So
yeah.
And I've been asked to production design, but I've passed. And after we got back from the Yukon, it was more like April-ish.
Mm-hmm.
I was asked to design like a $45 million feature. And it was great to be asked, but I said, thanks, but no.
Why?
No.
Because
saying
no is like I had it in the, I think two episodes ago was a, other guests, like we talked about, that no to saying no is sometimes easier than yes, but in this way, it's probably harder to say no for you instead of yes. So that's why I'm asking.
Well, it's hard to say no in that, I mean, it would be a great step to take, but I don't have any aspiration to design. Like it's a whole other level.
Yeah.
And then like come with that comes way more politics and it just, I'm happy with where I've gotten to in my career that, I know when to say no.
Yeah. Oh, that's good. Yeah. So what was your, well, sounds wasn't like, you said it's not wasn't a big movie.
No.
So how did you turn into Hollywood then, working in Hollywood for the big movies? And
it's just kind of the way it goes here. So my first thing was a pilot after Whale Music. And then it was a TV, another pilot. And then that pilot went to series. And then my first feature was The Hunted.
Mm-hmm.
And then from there, I kind of did in the mid-90s and into 2000, there were a lot more features coming here than there are now. And it was just, there were Hollywood features. That's what Vancouver does because it's Hollywood North.
Mm.
So then it's just by the people that you work with. In 95, I did Homeward Bound 2. With a local production designer named Michael Bolton, not to be confused with the singer, although he did stay in the singer's suite in Hollywood by thinking that it was the singer. So I worked with him for many years. So that's kind of how it works.
Yeah. So what was your favorite movie then so far? Because you did a lot.
Yeah, I think my favorite would be Interstellar, only because my first time working in Alberta, which I love, but working with Christopher Nolan.
Yeah.
And then, I mean, it's the only time most likely in my career that to have an Oscar, to work on an Oscar nominated movie.
Yeah.
And we didn't win because it was up against Grand Budapest Hotel, which total design movie, but
yeah,
that was huge.
Yeah. Working as an art director then isn't like a Monday to Friday job. I'm pretty sure like it's more project works, like you...
It is Monday to Friday. It's Monday to Friday in that it's 12-hour days. So your normal week is a 60-hour week.
Yeah.
Often you might work Saturday, a sixth day. And as an art director, I typically on a Sunday kind of organize mm-hmm. for the week. So that's kind of free time. So...
But you like you have this project or a movie and then you work on it for how long? I don't know.
Yeah, it depends. If it's like most movies used to kind of be 6-8 months.
Yeah.
Some are 4. Yeah. But each contract or each movie, each show is finite.
And then you have kind of the project is done and then you're looking for the next one. So
yes,
yeah. Always a gap, I guess.
Yeah. Not always. Sometimes there's overlap. But yeah, it depends.
Yeah. So you can be very busy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Like when I worked on iRobot, that was virtually an entire year. That was huge.
And so you're from Vancouver?
Via Ontario.
Okay, but...
But like, I moved when I was 7.
Yeah, so since then some, you...
From Vancouver.
Yeah. Did you saw the change of... Like, because now you talked about already about Vancouver's Hollywood North. Did you were part of... Like, did you notice the progress in the last 30 years? That more things are happening in Vancouver? Or was it always this situation and we didn't knew about that? Or
no, lots of people don't know, but there's a lot more that goes on in the last probably 20 years. There's a lot of TV in Vancouver. Vancouver's now more of a TV town.
Mm.
It's what I kind of joked in 2012, that TV, the wave of the future. And I mean, look at it.
Mm.
It's busy.
So it was before like LA, Hollywood was... In the 90s, maybe the main Hollywood, and now it changed it to Vancouver. Do you know why?
Money, dollar.
Yeah.
And crews. Like we had really good crews. Yeah. That's what enticed people to come, and the location.
What's it about the location? Is it because there's more diversity and getting nice places where you can make movies, or is it, what is it?
Well, yeah, it's location, it's the outdoors, and then like just studio space is cheaper than in America.
So the Hollywood where we're always thinking about when we don't know about it, it doesn't really exist.
It does. There's not that much, like LA's probably a bit busier than it has been, but yeah. I mean, Atlanta's another huge hub, and New York, but yeah. Montreal.
So but it's getting more, like LA, it's getting more the... touristic thing or the like where people live and the most real action of movie is happening in Vancouver, Atlanta, New York?
No.
Or still also...
It's still LA. Yeah. But yeah. LA too, it's so spread out. So
yeah,
lots of people... And Vancouver's the same now. Like people, if you live in a certain area and the studio's like an hour or more away, people will turn shows down.
Yeah.
Because they don't want to drive in the traffic right. there.
Yeah.
And it's kind of getting to be that here because they're putting lots of stuff out in Maple Ridge or further, yeah. Alder Grove.
Okay. What is your favorite movie then?
Favorite movie that I've done or favorite movie?
Well, when you're done, you said like it's kind of Interstellar, you would say.
Probably Interstellar. Yeah. iRobot, even though we did that in 2003, that still holds the test of time.
Yeah.
Although with Will Smith, I don't know.
Yeah.
Oh, and my other one, another movie that I quite like is Operation Finale, based on the true story of the tracking down of Adolf Eichmann, one of the most notorious SS Germans. You have to watch that one.
Yeah.
And working in Buenos Aires, so.
And what is your favorite actor then, or actress? We talked about it, I know, but.
Yep.
Or maybe it's not one, but.
Yeah, there's a bunch. It's hard to single it down to one. I like Michael Caine, not just because I've worked with him. Daniel Craig.
Yeah.
Laura Linney.
Who's that?
She was in Exorcism of Emily Rose.
Uh-huh.
She's been in a bunch of things. She's in Ozark.
Oh, right. Yeah. Yeah, I love that series.
Yeah. Oh, and then also Ben Kingsley.
Yeah. Yeah, he's great. Yeah.
And Henry Winkler.
And...
do you know who Henry Winkler is?
You talked about it? I don't know. Maybe.
You read The Fonz? Happy Days, a sitcom from the 70s.
No, I'm too young for
You're
that.
You're too young.
Probably.
Yeah. I worked with him and you know what? Well, he was great. He knew everyone's name, so.
So I know that you are a well-traveled person as well. And I mean, in your job, probably you traveled also a lot around the world. Do you travel a lot for this job, or is it more North America?
I've been lucky. My first experience on the sixth man, we went to Seattle. So that was a day trip. But then I worked, my biggest travel was working in 1998 in Cape Town, two mm-hmm. low-budget features, where I pretty well worked for 8 months and traveled for three, but not a solid eight and not a solid three. We did two features, one from January to April, and then I did a bit of traveling, then a bit of work, then a bit of travel, and then the second feature, then a bit of travel, then home. And then I got lucky on Love Happens. I got to work in Seattle for 2 weeks. I love Seattle. And then I worked in Portland for a couple of days, and we were going to go back and finish the show for 8 weeks. But then all of the Canadians, except for a couple, got cut loose, which was actually a bonus.
Mm-hmm.
And then, actually worked in Buenos Aires in 2017, which was huge. Worked, traveled. Yeah. And then, I forgot, Alberta. I've worked in Alberta now 3 times, which, I mean, I love the expanse of Alberta. Having family there and friends there just makes that easier. Is that all? I think
that was
all.
Just for work then.
That's just for work.
Well, that's quite a lot as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So most people haven't been able to work away. So I have been lucky, especially the Cape Town.
Yeah, we talked about it that already because I love Cape Town.
Yeah.
I went there twice and it's one of my favorite places to be.
Oh, yeah.
What's so special in Cape Town?
It's just a place that draws you in. It's like nothing that you ever see anywhere else. Like the Table Mountain, seeing the spotlights on Table Mountain, the tablecloth when you watch the clouds going down and back. And
it's like the people. Cloud waterfall.
Yeah, cloud waterfall.
Yeah. Did you went up to Lion's Head?
Oh, yeah. Lion's Head, hike Table Mountain.
Yeah.
Did Lion's Head a bunch. Took my mom and dad there when they were there for my mom's birthday in 98. They're about my age now. And we did it for the full moon. Did you ever do that? Yeah. That was sweet.
No, I never did that in full moon.
And I learned how to surf in Cape Town. So that was pretty cool.
Nice. And is that, you would say, is that your favorite place to be, your favorite country, or is that somewhere else?
I mean, it's hard to say.
Or is it Vancouver?
Vancouver. Vancouver's favorite as a base, but it's nice to go and visit.
Yeah.
And especially the good thing about when you work away, well, both there and in Buenos Aires, I was paid in U.S. So that was kind of good with Canadian dollar being low, but you get per diem. So when we were in Cape Town, we just kind of live like kings and queens. You can eat what you want, drink what you want.
Yeah.
So that adds to the experience.
Yeah, that's true.
Going to wine country.
Oh, yeah. Is there something, or do you have a goal for your life which is still open?
No, just to continue learning and seeing the world.
Yeah. So no, how's about your work? Like you still work or you just...
No, I'm kind of, everyone calls it semi-retired. If there were the right thing to come along away and not in Vancouver, then most likely. And even though I say not in Vancouver, like I said to you before, like out of the blue, it seemed like there was going to be cold pursuit too.
Yeah.
So that would partially be Vancouver and partially still be Alberta in the Rockies. So, and with a really good group of Norwegians. So that would be the only reason I would consider something in Vancouver. Otherwise, I don't want to do TV.
Yeah.
And no, I'd rather work somewhere else if it seems like it's a good project.
Yeah. And any private goal, which is like where you say, oh, I really want to do this in my life?
Nope, just traveling.
Is it an open country where you've never been? Or?
Yeah, travel.
What is the country, the first country where you would like to go where you've never been?
Well.
And why?
That's a hard one because we want to go back to, Dan has never been to Namibia, so that's on the list. And then we would go back to Cape Town to see our friends that are there. But then would have to, if our friends that live in Namibia currently do go to Mozambique, there'd maybe be a bit of a shift there. Yeah. So that, I want to go to Antarctica.
All right. Yeah, we talked about yesterday about that. Yeah.
I would love to go.
Why you want to go to Antarctica? because it's cold and white, and
I'm not a winter person, but I love the Yukon. I loved Alberta when it was minus 28.
Yeah.
Just because it's so remote and see the penguins.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it must be very special because you can maybe say, oh, it's just ice and white, but I think it's maybe even more intense than Yukon, because if you were going to the Yukon or places like the Yukon, you really feel the remote area. You feel that nature is having more power than everything else in these areas.
Okay.
And I think in Antarctica it would be probably even more intense, because if you just go on the ice and realize it's just ice around you, like there's...
Yeah, well, if you're kayaking and the wildlife and then the crossing, right? Like most people get sick, but I think it might have changed a bit now. It might be a bit easier.
Yeah.
But yeah, just if you go down to the very tip of South America and go even further, I don't know, that's what does it. Or go back to Patagonia.
And but you don't have plans for that at the moment.
So no.
Maybe one day.
One day.
So... how is Vancouver then for you? Because when you, like, is it, it was always your base or your home. How is it to live in Vancouver?
Well, it's great because we have easy access to so many things.
Mm.
It's an expensive place to live, but it's perfect. You can hike, you can ski, you can go to the beach all in a day.
Yeah, you can watch kind of out of your window to the ski mountains.
Yeah.
And you can kind of see the ocean on the other side.
Yeah. We're in a pretty good spot.
But did you ever thought about living somewhere else?
No.
Or was it like when, I mean, of course, I mean, you grow up here, very important part of your life, and then...
It's interesting when, like, in my adult life, I lived in Kits. For most of it, I never thought I would leave Kits, because we always joke, too, that, like, that was, like, the center of the universe.
Yeah.
Like Toronto, they think they're the center of the universe.
Yeah.
People from Kits do. But so we moved from the extreme west of Vancouver to the extreme east, and like just up the hill is the suburbs, but we're still in Vancouver. So that part's good. And I mean, I never thought I could live outside of Kits, but it's so nice to have your own little piece of green space. Just be, you know, go out and do what you need to do and come back and you've got your own private sanctuary.
Yeah.
And go out if you want to go out again, or just stay in. Doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Go paddling. Go dog walking.
Yeah, it's, you can be very active.
Yeah.
Yeah. How's it about the weather?
How's it? Well, the last 2 years, it's been very rainy in the spring and in the winter. So it never used to bother me. But last year was the first year it just got to most people. It was like so much rain. And this year there was a lot of rain too. But what got me through was having this picture of where I was going in Hawaii.
Yeah, that's a lot of people in Canada do. Like they, I also hear, like in the north, maybe even more, they just go out for a while in winter, and the winter gets too long or too rainy or too dark.
Yeah.
Like they just travel.
Yeah, you have to.
To the sun.
Even though, yeah, like up in the Okanagan where you think desert and gorgeous in the summer, from November to February up there, most of those people go south or go tropical somewhere.
Yeah.
You just, like they have the gray. We have the gray and the rain, so... kind of need to escape it or just deal with it. But when you have a dog, you have to get out. So it doesn't really matter.
Well, for me, it's kind of normal because like where I grew up is you get a mild summer. If you're lucky, you reach the 30s for a couple of days.
Yeah.
But from October to March, it's like rain and gray and windy and like here. Probably.
Okay,
but you don't
have
the ocean. You don't have mountains. Like super.
Yeah. We've got it all.
You have to survive. So,
Yeah.
So why is Negroni your favorite drink? And what is a Negroni about? What is in the Negroni to all the people they don't know about the Negroni?
Yeah.
And why is it the best drink for you in the world?
Well, we've been drinking them probably since maybe 2015. Stanley Tucci likes them, so that's also, actually he's a good actor. But so that's kind of what got us interested in them, just that's what people were starting to drink. So we tried it. And I should actually back up. 2014, I used to hate gin. I never liked gin.
Okay.
And gin or a Negroni is three equal parts, gin, Campari, and sweet vermouth.
Yes.
So prior to 2014, I wouldn't have liked a Negroni, but because my neighbor, Karen, and I went to a From Garden to Glass course at a garden shop, they got one of the top bartenders in Vancouver to come and talk about the drink part. And so these two guys showed you how to make different drinks. Yeah. And all of the drinks were gin-based. And we were both, Karen didn't like gin either. Hey, we like gin. So the best thing that he made was an elderflower smash. Uh-huh. So it was gin, simple syrup, lemon, and Saint Germain, which is an elderflower liqueur. But he taught us how to make Ain't Germain, kind of a play on words, which is pretty good. Yeah. So after the class, Karen and I made it. But it took hours. Elderflowers are these little tiny, like quarter-inch flowers yeah. that you've got to take off the branches. So yeah. we're like for 3 hours doing this.
Okay,
your neck is like so sore. So
I did syrup by myself, which is pretty easy. You don't have to be so specific and yeah. you just put them in a sugar water. And, yeah,
that was pretty specific. So we've made it once, but now we'll just buy Saint Germain. Yeah. So then we started Negronis, and then it was starting to be cool. Like this bartender, we would go to his restaurant, which was West, which is no longer there. And like he would show us how to mix things and tell us about things. That's how Dan got interested in old fashions, because he's mm-hmm. like, okay, well, I don't want a girly drink. What would you suggest? So that's what started that. But that's when bartenders were starting to barrel age drinks. So I got my own little barrel and I made barrel aged Negronis. Yeah. So that you put it in a barrel for a month and every week you turn it like a quarter turn, quarter turn, quarter turn. So it's getting the oak off the barrel uh-huh. and it just smooths it out.
Nice.
So I haven't done that in a while, but.
Oh, it's interesting because I think with gin, you really have to get the right gin. Like if you drink the cheap things, like you probably will never
No, get if you like take it from your mom and dad's liquor cabinet when you're a kid, that's what, like, ugh.
Yeah.
The juniper was like too much. But now, like you say, there's so many different varieties of gin, so many good ones.
Yeah, because gin tonic is my favorite drink. Mm-hmm. Like I can drink it a whole year.
You can? Even in the winter?
Yeah. Well, it's more tasty in summer, definitely. Yeah. It's like...
Yeah, it just quenches your thirst in the summer.
It belongs definitely more in summer, but I can drink it.
That's funny, too. So gin and tonics, when you're traveling, especially in Africa, you know, the quinine wards off the mosquitoes, but Dan never liked gin and tonics either. But when you're out on safari in the heat and they call for sundowners and they ask you if you want a gin and tonic, like it's so fitting.
Yeah, absolutely. Dina want to be part of it?
Of course, Dina. He's in the Pilates Zooms. The instructor goes, "Hi, Dana," because he'll come right there and stand in the middle when he's live.
Dina's your dog.
Dana's our dog.
You can sit next to me if you want.
Whoop, whoop.
Don't destroy my laptop. So do you have a story or encounter on your work with a very special person like Christopher Nolan or an actor which had an impact to you? Where you said, that's something which I will always keep in mind, this conversation or this situation?
I guess the first thing that comes to mind in what year was that? 1996, we did a pilot called Gold Rush mm-hmm. for Disney, which was actually about the Gold Rush. So it was 1899, 1900s. And on that show, I was actually doing graphics. So making old time labels for cans, like of boiled chicken, pears, peaches, any kind of goods like that, that the actors said, these are so authentic. You guys have helped us get into our roles.
Right.
So that was pretty good.
Oh, cool. Yeah. So that was kind of like what you really like to hear.
Yeah.
Like your work is perfectly done.
Perfectly done. And that's what, like lots of people will say to Dan, well, what is it that Kendall does? And he'll say, well, take a look. Like if you drive down a town and there's signs, if something jumps out at you, then they haven't done their job.
Right.
If it all blends, then they've done their job.
Yeah. I mean, there's people like they have YouTube channels for finding mistakes in big movies.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So we can't find your movies there.
Well, I think there are a few. I haven't looked, but.
I asked a couple listeners if they have a question to an unknown person like you, they can send it to me, which a few of them did.
Ah, wow.
So the only thing that they knew was that you were a woman, mm-hmm. because I didn't tell your name or anything. I just said, it's a she. And one question is, if you could travel back in the past, what would you do different and why?
I don't think there's anything, because like anything you do is like a stepping stone to the next thing you do. And you can draw on your past if kind of that's your perception. So one of the first TV shows that I did was The Marshal, which was about like American policemen that are called marshals. And I could phone up a marshal and ask him questions and be able to ask legitimate questions because of my degree in criminology and knowing what I knew from the courts. So it's all learning and just getting you to where I think you're kind of meant to be.
And I think if you are happy with the things you do and accepting, you probably say, well, why should I do something else?
Yeah. No, because again, like I would have been happy ending my career as an assistant art director.
Yeah.
But now I've ended it not being an art director, but being a supervising art director.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't change anything.
That's good, because that means that you were very happy. And another question is, if you could give the world one quote, which would it be? That's a tough one.
Maybe pay it forward.
Pay it forward? Okay.
Or be happy.
There's a lot of quotes for giving the world,
yeah.
I would say. But I always try to say nobody asked me, but if people asking me about something like that, I would say like, be yourself, because this is the only way to explore this crazy life in the world.
Yeah. Yeah. Get out there, be yourself.
What is your, like, what do you do as a hobby when you're not working, like to take your balance?
Lots of sports, lots of catching up with people and friends and family, gardening.
Yeah.
Snowshoeing.
Yeah.
Nice. Dog walking. I've got lots of friends that have dogs.
Yeah.
Just getting out.
And I know that you did something interesting. Was it goat yoga?
Goat yoga. My sister took me to goat yoga.
What's
for
that?
My birthday.
Tell me about that a bit.
Well, it's going out in Abbotsford, like near close to where my mom and dad live. And it's a thing. And it's funny because when we went, a construction coordinator that I know, he went like just after us.
Yeah.
And everyone's like, oh, goat yoga. So it's in a barn. It's not heated. You bring your mat. And then there's a goat herder, a goat walla.
Yeah.
And they put little bits of food on the tops of your mat. So the goats will come around and you're doing yoga. Depending, there was one guy that got peed on like 3 times.
Really?
Yeah. Then they you know, they poop around.
Yeah.
So you're doing yoga. And this one lady, when she's in a pose, the goats were just climbing all over her back. So that's kind of what it is. You get to see goats. At the end, you can hold them and feed them and play with them. But while you're trying to do your yoga, they're wandering around.
And they do like everything they do normally as well.
Yeah,
like
a normal yoga course.
Yeah, and how was it for you then? Like,
well,
because goats are smelling as well pretty strong.
Yeah, it wasn't too bad because they're little tiny goats.
Okay, they're kind of sweet. Yeah.
Yeah, but you're focusing, but you're not focusing because you see them doing funny things, so you're laughing. One was nibbling. Oh, he actually nibbled my hair, like he gave my bangs a trim. And he was doing something to my sister, so yeah, you're laughing.
Yeah.
It's not traditional yoga, but it's fun.
It's fun.
Yoga.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then you get an East Indian dinner after.
Nice.
So it's good.
Cool.
Yeah.
Is there any other experience like this which you made somewhere or when you traveled?
Well, zip lining.
Okay.
The first time I did it, we did a family trip to Costa Rica in 1999. So it's my mom and dad, my brother and his wife, my sister and her husband and me. Out of that group, only my sister and Keith and I went to do it.
Yeah.
And it was so fun. So you go ziplining through the jungle. Then you go and have this hot mud bath where these young boys are rubbing the mud all over you, and then they put leaves on so you look like an animal. And then you go in the hot springs. And then there was a little horseback ride. So we get back and we're telling everybody what we did. And they're like, oh, we should have come. It's like, yeah,
oh, that was the whole trip, like all this.
It was a one day thing. Yeah, that was all nice. In one. Yeah. And then the next time we did it was for my sister's 40th birthday in Whistler. But different experience because that was October and it's fall and it was raining. It wasn't the tropics of Costa Rica. And then this past October, my nephew and I did it in Whistler, and same, it was rainy, but it was fun.
Would you, maybe it came up like not in the beginning, but did you thought about one day, like, would be nice to go to the Oscars one day?
Oh.
Like to have a, like a...
Yeah, that would have been kind of cool.
Yeah?
Yeah.
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 So because like Interstellar was the only movie where you worked on which were nominated.
Yeah.
But you didn't went there.
No. Only... The people that get to go would be my boss and the set decorator, because you're nominated for art direction and set decoration, so it's those two people that go. And I probably should have gone to the Art Directors Guild Awards, but no one was going, which was too bad. So a friend that's a decorator just went this past spring to that, the Art Directors Guild Awards. But okay, one other cool thing. So this one designer that I worked with on Words and Pictures, Patrizia von Brandenstein. She actually worked on Amadeus. I don't know. Do you know that movie?
I don't know it. I heard about it. I don't know it.
Yeah. Big time movie. Amazing movie. So she's been around a long time. When I worked with her, she was probably 73. And that was 2013. I don't know which year it was. Maybe 2016. Maybe 2017. She was getting a Lifetime Achievement Award at the Art Directors Guild dinner. And she named all of the art directors she's ever worked with.
Oh, nice.
So my friend, the one that I told you about that lost everybody, the props master, she was at those awards and she texted to say, Kendall, I'm the only one here probably that knows you, but some other people should have known you, but Patrizia called you out, gave you a really nice shout out. So,
oh, that's cool.
That's cool.
Yeah. So, oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
But it also shows that like, your job is kind of under the radar of movies, you know? Like,
yeah.
How do you say when at the end of the movie, like when the
end credits.
End credits. Yeah. So if that's running, of course, like most people don't really watch it.
Yeah, most people are getting up
then
to leave.
You stop or you leave. And even if you do, but you kind of don't not really know what an art director is about and what are they doing. That's why I really like that we talked about it a bit and get a... kind of a picture.
Yeah, well, it's funny too. You watch, like in Vancouver, if you go to a movie and watch the end credits, because it's something you know people have worked on, it's amazing seeing how many other people are actually watching. Yeah. So they either know somebody or worked on it themselves. Yeah. So that's kind of fun.
Yeah.
But most times it's, people walking in front of you so you can't even see.
Where's the money comes from for movies?
Studios. Some of it's
kind of an investment in...
Yeah, some of it's self-directed, like the South African stuff, it was financed by the director who did all the Ernest movies. So I was supposed to actually go back for another half a year, but he ran out of money, so we didn't go back.
Yeah.
And if we had gone back, my mom and dad were my only visitors in that entire year. My friends are all going to come for the next part, but no one got there.
Yeah.
So they have regrets.
So it's always kind of a risk making a movie, invest in a movie, because you never really know how it will.
Yeah, and the other thing is, like, lots of times you get a phone call and you're scheduled to work, like, say, in 2 weeks, but you never really know if the show's going to actually go until you get your first paycheck. And even though, like, sometimes, even though you've been paid, some of them might go down. Like, they don't usually, but sometimes it happens.
Hey, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
For all this nice talk on a Wednesday noon. We have.
Yeah.
Thanks for hosting me.
Thanks for hosting me.
Yeah. And I will be back soon.
Okay.
Probably. Or if you're coming to Victoria, shoot me a message.
Sounds good.
And all the best.
Thank you. Same to you.
Thanks. Oh, I am more than a name.
Somebody told me.